Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing the show. It's the Buckmaster Radio Program on Tuesday, February 6, 2024. Happy 110th heavenly birthday to my mom. Wow. She'd be 110 today. Anyway, we've been around a while, not that long. We're in our 14th year with the radio program and 36th year in the Tucson media, coming to you from the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio, 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for local news and talk. And we have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, not only for the live stream, but the extensive archive of content going all the way back to the first week of our radio show, January of 2011. The Buckmaster Live Line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, and we will use the live line, utilize it right off the bat this morning with Dr. Dennis Hoffman, director of the L. William Seidman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business at ASU. He's the director of ASU's Office of the University Economist. His sponsored project efforts include the construction and maintenance of the revenue forecasting model that's been used by the Executive Budget Office for the state of Arizona, going all the way back to 1982. Professor Hoffman, how are you, sir?
Bill, I'm doing well. Doing well. Waiting for a little rain, which is much needed up here, and it looks like you're going to get some as well.
Hey, yep, we're good. We always welcome rain in the desert. Sometimes it's a little too much all at once, but we do certainly need it. The last time you joined us, we had just had the State of the State address in early January. What are some of your thoughts now, as we're now 1 month into the legislative session when it comes to budget matters?
Well, on the spend side, I think everybody is realizing that this is going to be a pretty tough year. I think the surprising news came from the Joint Legislative Budget Committee over the first month of the session, and that is a pretty dramatic reduction in their revenue forecast. So I've been busy looking at the ASU model and running the ASU model and seeing if I can explain some of the concerns that they have right now. So it's going to be an interesting budget year, debating both spending and revenues.
Yeah, I thought of you when I saw that story about that the budget picture didn't look that great. I mean, what accounts for this? Did your models indicate that we were heading down this path, or no?
Well, I don't know how much of this rabbit hole you want to crawl into.
I'm willing to go there.
You know, to just line it up, the sales tax is not growing as fast as it has been growing over the last few years. Our model is in the vicinity of 4% growth year over year. But the JLBC just came out and said, no, it's going to be 2.7%. And I know it's only a little over a percentage point difference, but that's quite a bit of money when you're talking billions and billions of dollars. On the income tax, it's going to be an interesting income tax year because of the tax cuts and the reaction of taxpayers to the tax cuts, the reaction of the system to the tax cuts. I'm pretty confident that I've got everything dialed in for this spring's tax season, but my ASU's running on the order of $300 million ahead of JLBC for this spring, and then that kind of carries forward next year. When you add it all up, I don't think it's a $1.7 billion problem based upon revenues, at least. The spend side is, of course, not my purview, but at least the ASU model is producing more revenues than JLBC's is at this particular point. And you know, we provide input to the governor's office, and the governor's office weighs it and, you know, does with it, you know, with what they see fit. So we'll just have to see how this kind of all comes out. But, you know, amid all this, Bill, we're looking for that recession that never seems to show up. And we booked another great month nationally on job growth. You know, it's this irony. The economy seems to be humming along. GDP's doing well. Inflation's coming down. Jobs are being created. And you ask somebody in an opinion poll what they think of the economy, and they say, oh, I'm doing okay, but the economy is terrible. Everybody else is terrible. And I don't really know where it's coming from. I did happen to see this morning, I saw consumer confidence in Europe, and it's kind of the same thing. Now, Europe's economy is worse, but consumer confidence is much worse, say, today than it was, you know, 5 or 6 years ago in Europe. And so that's not a Biden economics effect or, you know, a Biden versus Trump kind of thing. You know, sentiment, maybe people are just grumpy, Bill. I don't know. We need to do some cheerleading, I think, and get people in a better mood.
Yeah, it is interesting that perception is so much, it becomes like reality for so many people. Oh, you know, I'm hanging in there, but it's a horrible economy. Yeah, you're right. I mean, and I don't know how we turn that around. You know, getting back to $1.7 billion, and I know you're not, you don't really follow the spending side of that, but this could, if lawmakers perceive that that is the issue, this could really hurt spending on some government state programs, Professor Hoffman.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I think it's widely known and widely reported, you know, government agencies and programs and universities, all of us are not, you know, it's not easy times. We have to, you know, we have to make our payrolls and deal with the demands on the universities. And, you know, the state support for universities has just declined dramatically, certainly since I moved. Maybe it's me. It's kind of the start of the real decline started in 1980 when I moved here, Bill. But, you know, we'll figure out a way. Universities are resilient. Agencies will, you know, tighten their belt, and people will have to learn. You know, if tax revenues come up short, people are going to have to learn to live with less in the way of public services. And that's, you know, that hurts some of the most disadvantaged people the most, which is too bad.
Tourism seems to have had a huge rebound. That's got to help the tax picture.
Yeah, we've got a little bit of blip in the data. You know, we had the Super Bowl here last year about at this time. So, the hotel, motel, restaurant, and bar scene was thriving this time next year. We've got the NCAA tournament up here in March. Of course, we have the Cactus League, which is a big, big injection in the state. And, you know, tourism is indeed alive and very well. I'm a little chagrined with this weather hitting the Phoenix Open at such a time. Phoenix Open is a real showcase event for the nation. I love it when the nation sees our bright sunshine and, you know, the Tucson tournament works the same way.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Bright sunshine and the cactus and, you know, people in shirt sleeves when it's cold in the Midwest. Well, you know, this week it's going to be pretty warm in the Midwest, and here we are, you know, dreary and wet,
yep.
Unfortunately.
But we do need it. All right, Professor Hoffman, what about, before we let you go, with interest rates and the housing picture, a final comment from you on that?
Well, things are getting better. We face this massive lock-in. You know, 50 to 60% of mortgage holders have, you know, mortgage rates in the, you know, threes and fours because they refinanced during the time that they had to refinance. So there's this major lock-in effect, Bill. If you've got a 3 or 4% mortgage, you don't really want to sell your house and move up. You want to, because if you do that, you got to go through the hassle of selling the house, number one, and then number two, getting a new mortgage at 6.5% and 7%, which historically is not high, but it's twice what you're currently paying. And that's all that matters in terms of history for many, many, many homeowners.
All right, Professor Dennis Hoffman, always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you in about a month. Thank you very much.
Okay, Bill, and best everybody in the Old Pueblo.
All right, thanks a lot. Professor Dennis Hoffman with us from ASU. He is the director of the L. William Seidman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business at ASU. Shelley Fishman is with me in studio, and after a very, down day on the market yesterday, so we're kind of like, flat is the word of the day. We'll be right back with Shelley. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Whether you've considered an all-inclusive luxury cruise, an expedition adventure, or a relaxing river cruise, come to Bon Voyage Travel's annual showcase on March 3rd at the Hilton El Conquistador. Presentations will be offered throughout the day to provide you a chance to hear more about these travel brands and their exciting offers. Bill Buckmaster and I will be teaming up to present the travel trends of 2024. Visit bvtravel.com for more information on Bon Voyage Travel's free showcase on March 3rd.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Mona's Danish Bakery, happy to announce they do have a liquor license now, and they are serving wine. They also have champagne and even beer. So you can now have that mimosa with your breakfast at Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They are open right now for a great lunch. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. Open for breakfast Tuesday through Sunday, the doors open at 6:30.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Shelley Fishman. Shell, how's the week going?
The week is going kind of medium. Yesterday was a horrible day. We can talk about why.
Yeah.
And today I'm just grumpy, as Dr. Hoffman said.
Well, Dr. Hoffman hit the nail on the head. We've been talking about it off and on for, it seems like, forever. The perception is that people think, well, some will say, oh, it's the Biden economy. Things are horrible. Who knows where that's coming from, but.
Well,
it is.
You know,
it's there.
It's last week I went out on a limb. Maybe, you know, I should know better than doing that.
Yeah, you made a prediction.
And I made a prediction. I said it's about a 50-50 chance that the Fed would actually cut interest rates at the announcement the very next day. And I said, you know, probably not a quarter of a point, probably a half point.
Yeah.
Where they didn't. They
I
kept
wish
them
you would,
where they
wish
were.
Your prediction had come true, but it didn't.
And then the Fed chair, Mr. Powell, appeared on 60 Minutes.
Oh, boy.
And kind of hinted that he wasn't about to do anything on interest rates until the middle of the year.
Yeah.
Monday morning, the markets opened drastically down, and they recovered considerably during the day. And today, they're still having difficulty finding a way toward evaluating what this really means. There are problems with keeping those interest rates as high as they are. And Dr. Hoffman was talking about mortgages, and mortgages are one of the problems. Mortgage rates are high. People are reluctant to sell their houses now and take higher mortgages when they buy a new house. And so the existing housing market is in, you know, some kind of shambles right now. From, you know, on a national basis, the new house market is better, but that's a problem. But it also bleeds through to other things. The used car market is a mess.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, because used cars, in order to finance a used car now, you've got to pay about 7 or 8 or 9%, depending upon your credit rating.
Mm.
So that's affected. I would agree with keeping the rates high if inflation were continuing to be a problem. But inflation right now has come way, way down. It's almost exactly where the Fed wants it to be. We're not going to see price reductions in certain things like food. But if inflation is where the Fed is saying it really ought to be, then they need to give those people who have suffered because of their policies over the past year and a half, they need to give people some relief, and unfortunately they didn't do it. The other thing that suffers is investment on the part of businesses who need to take out business loans if they're going to be improving their plant, you know, building new plant, et cetera, doing capital investment. So I was really hoping that this would have been a good time for the Fed to surprise us all in the right direction, and they didn't.
Yeah, and the feeling is now that it's not going to be next month.
Right, right.
And
it won't be until
that
until
kind of
May.
Sentiment really hurts it, Wall Street
it does.
And hurts the
and
markets.
You know, coming on top of one of the best job reports you can imagine, 353,000 jobs created in January, and the November and December numbers were revised upward. You know, we wound up with a 3.1 GDP increase for the year 2023, which is, we haven't seen an above 3% GDP increase in, gosh, decades.
But the spin is that it could bring inflation up again.
Well, that might be the spin. It's nonsense.
Well, that's
it could, but that's not what was causing the inflation. Mm. As it turns out, the people who said this is transitory, were right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the increase in the interest rates probably isn't what brought it under control. What brought it under control was the ships getting into harbor and dumping their stuff, and we could, you know, get it around so that the supply side problems were fixed. I am reluctant to ascribe political motives to Mr. Powell. I just wish that he would be a little bit more compassionate about the American people. The American people in general right now are enjoying a very, very good economy, best in the world. However, there are large portions of the American economy that are complaining and are grumpy and have a right to be.
And how do you fix that, Shelley Fishman?
Well, you fix it a couple of ways. One way is to reduce interest rates. But another way is to communicate properly what's going on. You know, we've got an entire political party that has a stake in making the economy look not so good. And that stake, you know, when you go to the grocery store, Bill, and you see the price of eggs and meat and chicken and other things, you remember that. You remember that a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, your weekly bill was one amount, and now it's 20 or 30% higher than that. You don't remember that, oh, by the way, your salary is also 20 or 30% higher. You don't remember the $1,600 stimulus increases that you got. What you remember is what you saw last. And that's human nature. And what we have to do politically, I believe, is make sure that people are getting the truth and are putting things in perspective. But it's very hard to tell people that when instead of spending $100 at the market, they've spent $120 and didn't come home with any more in their baskets. So, you know, that makes people grumpy. The administration, I believe, was trying to do a better job of communicating this. They did, you know, have not been succeeding. And again, statistically, we are the envy of the world. Our inflation is lower than anywhere else. Our GDP growth is higher than anywhere else. Even consumer confidence is doing well. And we had in January a 0.6% over December increase in wages. Mm-hmm. Now, those happen to be in the middle income earners, not at the bottom. So a lot of people didn't feel that. But statistically, this is a great economy, one of the best ever. And yet what's happening is it's being promoted by those who have a reason to promote it that way as a bad economy. And people see the reinforcement of that articulation every time they go to the store.
Every time they go to the store, or when they the two indicators that people where they're spending the money on a daily basis, the grocery store or the gas pump, and yep. or the gas pump, maybe together on the same day, the gas prices
are lower. They're about $3 a gallon.
Yeah,
and when you adjust for inflation, that's about where they've been for the past 30 years. So. That problem has alleviated significantly from a you know petroleum perspective. We're a net exporter. We are taking more stuff out of the ground, both natural gas and crude oil, than we ever have in the past. Our refineries can't handle it, so we have to send it elsewhere to be refined. It's again, that's not what's articulated by those people who want to say drill, baby, drill. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can drill and drill and drill, but we're already drilling and drilling and drilling. Mm-hmm. And even if we were awarding licenses right now, the petroleum companies, which have a lot of idle licenses, wouldn't drill there because we've got, you know, enough stuff mm-hmm. coming mm-hmm. out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And petroleum raw, the crude oil prices, both in New York and on the British exchange, are right about where they need to be, you know, mm-hmm. between $70 and $80 a barrel. So that's not a problem. The problem right now is that the effects of the policies that the central banks have put in place to fix these problems that were very real problems, but mm-hmm. that nobody really understood quite what was happening. Mm-hmm. Those fixes are now the problem, and we need to get the central banks to kind of back off and realize that they're hurting people. And they're hurting people who really can't afford to be hurt. I mean, you know, you and I have to pay a little bit more for a pound of chicken, so what? Mm-hmm. But there's a whole bunch of people for whom those kinds of differences really count. And those people make up you know, a large portion of the population, and we need to help those people, with those kinds of problems. And I didn't get any of that from Jay Powell on Sunday night.
I wish he had just thought a little bit about what am I doing here, going on 60 Minutes, which had a huge audience for that particular show because it was preceding the Grammy Awards. Right. So here he, I mean, if it, he had to realize that it's going to, what he says is going to influence the market.
His job is controlling inflation, and he's got one tool to do it, and that's interest rates. Mm-hmm. So that's the tool he's using, and he's going to be very conservative about it. He doesn't, his job description does not say make the public feel good about what's going on. And so he's taking a very strict line on what he's doing. It's not wrong, but it's not as right as it could be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Shelley, we've got a few seconds left. Any final thoughts?
Well, yeah. One thing that I'd like to talk about is just this effect of what happens when you hear people say things that may or may not ring true, that putting things in context is so important. So, you know, when you get right-wing news media screaming about a bad economy, it's important to put that in the context of where the economy really is statistically.
Mm-hmm.
I understand, again, human nature, but it is not helpful to vote against this country. And that's what a lot of people are doing. And I just find it kind of deplorable.
All right, Shelley Fishman, thank you very much. Shelley, I hope you have a great rest of the week, okay?
You too. I won't be grumpy.
All right. Take a break right here. Congressman Juan Ciscomani is waiting in the wings. We'll be with the congressman right after that.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, our go-to nursery here in town, 3384 East River Road, right by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. You will find everything you could possibly imagine for your garden, and the very knowledgeable sales staff, the associates there, will point you in the right direction. Not only point you in the right direction, they'll take you to where the plants are that will do very well for you. On that 13-acre site, they've got so much merchandise there, and especially over at Zocalo, beautiful pottery, Talavera pottery from Mexico. I think they've probably got the largest collection selection in Arizona for sure. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. They're in their 53rd year of business, and they're open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, and we're going to be doing one here momentarily, that is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line and back to the nation's capital. Juan Ciscomani, Republican representing in the United States Congress, Arizona's 6th Congressional District, joining us on the live line. Congressman, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. Thank you for asking. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. So we have the major bipartisan border security and asylum restrictions package. Now we're hearing that in the Senate there could be opposition that might roadblock this thing. And Democratic senators say they're stunned that Republicans would abandon this package after working so hard to get it crafted. What's your thought?
Well, you're right. I mean, you're seeing the bill itself fall apart over on the Senate side. A lot of concerns have been raised from different senators on this. It was worked in a bipartisan effort. That's no question on that. I don't know on the Senate who was involved in drafting this, but apparently not everyone was brought up to speed on it, given that when the language was released over the weekend, much anticipated language, by the way. We have been hearing about this for months, Bill. We were briefed on it on the House. We kept asking for some kind of language. But, of course, they were in the negotiating phase of this, and they didn't release anything until over the weekend, Sunday night. And that's when we all got to see it for the first time. And it immediately raised concerns with some. Some jumped on it pretty quickly. And then since then, it's been almost but 36 hours since that point, and I think it's only lost ground rather than gained any traction due to the all the things that it misses on there. And well, we don't know what's going to happen on the Senate side. All of a sudden, Mitch McConnell, the minority leader over on the Senate side, seems that in a meeting with senators, he also recommended to not bring it up or to vote no on that. So it's in trouble over in the Senate for sure.
Well, it's been touted as the most comprehensive border security package in maybe 40 years. There are things to like about this, aren't there, Congressman?
Yes, I agree. There are things that we've been advocating for a while. I'll give you a few quick examples. One, for example, at hiring flexibility for CBP agents, with the ability to waive the polygraph test and the requirements for that. That's something that we've been advocating for a long time. That's one of the things that it's in the way of being able to hire more agents as we need it. It also raises the credible fear standard. So it does have some things in there that I would personally be happy to support on an individual basis for these efforts and things that we've been calling for a long time. What there are more things, the negatives on this or the missed opportunity on this, in my opinion, heavily outweigh the whatever benefit there is on this bill. First of all, it's not strong enough. It doesn't go where it needs to go. The crisis that we're facing is in complete chaos right now. In the Tucson sector, our sector is the most impacted in the entire country right now. And it's a week off or on, but for the most part of the last couple of months, this has been the hottest sector in the whole country because of the activity in Texas by the governor. It's just drawing people over to Arizona because it's perceivably and rightfully more open in that sense, and for people to come in here. So that's a problem. The other part of the issue here is, of course, the limit of 5,000 encounters at the border a day. This is a daily number that is way too high. Obviously, you're talking about 150,000 a month. Those numbers can skyrocket very quickly. So not enough on that aspect as well. It doesn't end the president's abuse of parole authority. And what we're seeing in the abuses of the asylum system, that's still there. Essentially the catch and release aspect of it, of people still being able to be in the country for months or years before getting a court date, that isn't dealt with the right way as well. So again, it's a heavily missed opportunity on this, and that's why I've been critical of the package. I want to see something, but this is not going to get us there.
Tying it to the Ukraine and to a certain extent the Israeli situation, do you think that was a mistake?
Well, that's something that we didn't do in the House. In the House, we passed H.R. 2 individually. That's a border security bill. We also passed the Israel aid separately as well. We've dealt with the Ukraine aid also separately. So the House has done these on separate bases. The Senate decided to go into with that strategy that, quite frankly, proved to not be successful in that sense. So, we're eager to see something that they could actually do. Now, there is a new bill here in the House for Israel, again, to reiterate the importance of this, and we can get this aid to them as soon as possible on an immediate basis. So we should be voting on that later today.
Are you concerned, though, about Ukraine and that situation?
I am concerned for that situation in the Ukraine as well. That's why it was important to get a package that prioritized border security, and that way we could also deal with the requirements on Ukraine. I got to tell you, even on this package, this package on the Ukraine aid, it adds the accountability that some of us have been looking for as well. So I do think that there is some merit to this bill, and I think it was a good attempt and an effort in some ways, but it falls way short for an ultimate support of it. However, it does deal with things that we absolutely need to be looking at: Ukraine, Israel. We also talk about Taiwan, and of course, but the border needs to be the top priority on it.
I want to talk a little bit about legislation you've been pushing to crack down on border-related high-speed car chases.
Yeah. So thanks for mentioning that, Bill. I mean, this is just another example that while all this mess is happening and people can get on the same page, we're working to get these wins in legislation and actually make some progress on this. This bill basically imposes federal immigration and criminal penalties on smugglers that are engaging in high-speed car chases with either CBP or local law enforcement that is assisting the federal government. We've seen many of these cases, including who the bill was named after, Agent Raul Gonzalez in Texas, who was involved in this, in a pursuit like this, ended up being in an accident while on the line of duty, and he died in the accident. But not only law enforcement, we saw this in Cochise County over in a woman from Benson as well. She was on her way to celebrate her 65th birthday, and a high-speed chase, a smuggler, a young person actually struck her and killed her right on the spot. So innocent bystanders are suffering from this as well. There are no federal penalties for the fleeing part of that encounter. So my bill does that. And this idea wasn't mine. It came from the agents themselves. When I first won and got into office, I said, what law would you like to see in the books right now that you don't currently have? And they mentioned this one. So we went right to work, and it actually passed last week on bipartisan basis. Every Republican voted for it, but also 56 Democrats here in Washington voted for it, which was, quite honestly, I was a bit surprised, because at home, the feedback on border security, I get it from both Democrats and Republicans, mayors, county supervisors. It's not such a partisan issue as it is up here in Washington, but even here, we were able to get the support of over 50 Democrats.
So this would be penalties. This would take the penalties to the federal level, where currently it would be on the state level, Congressman.
That's right. So right now, there that doesn't exist right now. So what we have to do is signal to any bad actor illegally coming through the southern border and then getting engaged in these smuggling activities that, I got to tell you, the vast majority of these smugglers are U.S. citizens, and they recruit them from Tucson and from Phoenix. Those are the two main recruiting spots. And a lot of them are young drivers. And what we want to do is let them know that that activity is going to be heavily penalized. If they cause a major accident, especially when somebody dies in that accident, there's going to be some heavy penalties to it. And if it's one of the migrants that is driving, then that person will be obviously arrested and deported and will not be granted any kind of asylum or anything. So it has harsh penalties for either the person's here as a citizen or non-citizen.
What else can you say before we move on from the border issue, Congressman Ciscomani?
Well, this continues to be the number one priority for our constituents. This is something that I want to remind everyone the president can and should impact immediately. We look at Congress for making these laws, and we're working on that. You saw the bill that I passed, and the Senate is offering this solution that in my mind falls short. Nevertheless, you got to give him credit for putting something in writing. But remind people that the president today could end the catch and release that we're seeing, the exploitation of the parole authority. He could reinstate remain in Mexico. He can expand and expedite the removal authority, and he could also renew the building of the wall. All this could be done today if he wanted to. So I put a lot of the responsibility, all the responsibility really, of the border crisis that we have on the White House, Secretary Mayorkas, and the president, of course.
Yeah, I want to pick up on that after the break about the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas. Why don't we talk about that after we take a break? So stay with us for another segment, please, Congressman.
You got it.
All right, let's take a break right here. It's the Buckmaster Show, Tuesday edition. We will be right back with Congressman Juan Ciscomani.
This is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. I want to talk about one of our great sponsors, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. We send so many of our listeners over to that beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment, the southwest portion specifically. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. It's only about a three-hour drive to Silver City, and there's so many wonderful outdoor activities like the Gila National Wilderness, the Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Lots to do, some great places to stay, and great places to eat in historic Silver City. Check it out. Again, southwestnewmexico.org. Let's go back on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We are continuing our conversation with Republican Juan Ciscomani, Arizona's 6th Congressional District United States Representative. Congressman, this Department of Homeland Security effort to impeach Mr. Mayorkas, why are Republicans proceeding with this? Is this mainly symbolic?
Well, you know, it looks like our conversations today are pretty heavy, Bill. You know, like you talk about the border, and we talk about this, the bill and what's not in it that could be. Then we have another situation here with Secretary Mayorkas. These are things that I hope people are paying attention to, because they're serious. This actually, in terms of his impeachment, would be a historic impeachment, in my opinion, for someone with historic failures. So it's very much deserved in a lot of ways. And no, I don't think it's just a messaging one. The House has a job to do. The Senate has a job to do. Of course, an impeachment needs to pass both chambers and by a wide margin over in the Senate. So I can't say what the senators are going to do, but I know what the House needs to do and what I've been calling for a long time here. This isn't new in my case, in terms of holding him accountable. And I am now calling for his impeachment, but for a good amount of time, including the campaign and then early in the term, we called him to do his job. And that been a year in, 2 years in, now 3 years in, nothing has changed. And it's clear that he has willfully and systematically refused to comply with the law. And that's one of the charges on the impeachment. The other one is breach of public trust. I think those are both very, very true. In terms of where he's at, we are facing the worst border situation we've ever faced, and there is zero willingness on his part to do something about this. Whatever I listed right before the break that the president could do today, that's exactly what the secretary could enforce. And actually, Border Patrol has said that with just Remain in Mexico being implemented again, over 70% of the traffic would stop almost on an immediate basis. But he won't do that. So for the safety of the country, this is something that needs to be done. The vote will go up later today. It seems to be scheduled for. The schedule tends to change, and we'll see if we have the votes. I know how I'm voting, and I'm voting to impeach.
This would be a very rare step. In fact, it could make Mr. Mayorkas the first cabinet secretary to be impeached in nearly 150 years.
Yeah, that's true. That's why I said at the beginning, this is historic in a lot of ways. Also, the chaos and crisis that he's created is also historic. And we keep seeing these numbers break the record every single week, and the Tucson sector being the main sector for that. And this isn't something that we are, at least I am, I'll speak for myself, that you're just, that you wake up every day thinking you're going to vote to impeach a sitting secretary. This is serious. And this took a lot of thought, a lot of looking at a lot of the evidence and a lot of the numbers, and considering what my district needs and what I was sent up here to do, and border security and making sure that we do all that we can to secure our border is the number one priority for my district. We've asked the questions, we've done the questionnaires, and I hear this from home every time I go home. I was just there this weekend, and this is what I heard about the most. So this is what we need to do. I don't take this lightly. It shouldn't be taken lightly, and not something that we called on day one, but it is something that it got to the point where this is what's necessary.
How about expanding the child tax credit?
Yeah, so that was one good bill here that we've been able to really focus on. This is important for middle-class families and also small businesses. This has happened last week. I'm very proud of this vote as well. This basically, for families that are struggling with high prices and inflation and everything that I am also suffering with, a family of six kids, eight of us. I mean, we see the aspects of this, and what this does is it adds an inflation adjustment to the child tax top line number. It also eliminates the penalty for large families to ensure that the child tax credit works and incentivizes. It just applies equally to all family members with multiple children as well. And it gives parents flexibility to use either a current or a prior year income calculation for 2024 or 2025. So for people filing this year in 24 or 423, this applies to that as well. Also important to note, this is a two-year provision. So it has a sunset of 2 years. I've always been a fan of sunsets. I think anything that the government applies one way or the other should be reviewed at a certain period of time. 2 years is the consensus that was necessary to get this passed. And, so we're going to have to review this in 2 years. So it's not permanent. So for those that like it, we still have to prove that this works, like the 2017 package worked, and that was very successful. We should see the data on that. But also, we have to make a case for it in 2 years again. And also, let me just say real quick, for small businesses, this also has a big advantage for our small businesses. Without this bill, Arizona would actually be losing about $154 million with research and development spending. So it gives our small businesses more areas to be able to write off their expenses on taxes with research development and other areas that benefit small businesses as well.
All right, let's see if we can work a quick call in from a listener. Robert called us on the live line. Go ahead, Robert. You're with Congressman Juan Ciscomani.
Thank you, Bill. In my humble opinion, it's a historic waste of time, and this guy knows it. The Senate would never impeach him. Even if they did, Biden would just put in another lackey that does what he's told.
So what about the Mayorkas? And Robert says it's a waste of time. If it's going to be killed in the Senate, so why do it?
Well, like I said, the House has a duty. And Robert, I don't disagree with you on your take on what the Senate is going to do. However, the House has a responsibility to do what we feel it's right. And if we only did what we thought the Senate was going to agree to, then we wouldn't do much, or we would spend too much money. That's why we have the balance of power here. And in spending, for example, we've sent them a much lower number that they were comfortable with. They wanted a higher number, and we ended somewhere closer to our spending level, actually. So you see that when you have a divided government. But in this case, there may not be a consensus. There probably won't be a consensus because there isn't a middle ground on this. It's either impeached or not. We are going to do our job. We have to do what's necessary here, and we believe. And he has neglected his duties, and I stand by this vote. And it's going to be one vote on this, but again, this doesn't stop us from actually working on the other solutions. You heard about the bill that I passed last week. I've got other ones in the pipeline that work with social media companies communicating with cartel recruiters as well. I mean, we've got while the Senate and big picture of the House, they can't agree on some of these things. I'm passing bills that are bipartisan that do have a shot in the House and the Senate and the president signing as well. Not only on border security, but on veterans and other issues also. So I keep working and grinding at this in spite of that. So in my case, I'm not wasting time. I'm going to vote for the impeachment when it comes up, and I'm also going to keep working on the other issues.
All right, Congressman Juan Ciscomani, thank you very much for the time.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show, wrapping up our Tuesday edition. On behalf of Congressman Ciscomani, sending his regards, and John, always sending pleasant regards to us, engineering and producing our program, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everyone well.